Writer's Week, it often creates controversy, and people would say, good on them. That's what they're there for. They're there to make us think. This year's Writer's Week is no exception because of a couple of guests to Writer's Week, and one of them is Susan Abulhawa. And Susan Abulhawa is controversial because of a number of comments she's made about Palestine and the state of Israel, and also the war in Ukraine. She just arrived in Adelaide for her appearance at Writers' Week, and on the way, she posted a little video in which she said, look, a number of people have tried to cancel me out, and I need to set the record straight. So we thought it would be a good idea for us to speak to her before she takes to the podium. And she joins us now. Good morning, Susan Abulhawa.
Good morning, David.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
A lot of people don't want you to speak. What is it you would like to say?
I released a statement, and I responded to a lot of the accusations in the media. I came here as a writer, as a cultural worker, to talk about my novels and about literature, the power of literature, and thankfully, in no small part to the fortitude of Louise Adler, I will have that chance.
Mm. The organizers of Adelaide's Writers' Week, including Louise Adler, have justified your attendance because they say it is more than hate speech. But you do say hateful things, don't you?
I don't think so. No, and I don't think that anyone at the festival actually referred to it as hate speech.
Well,
hate speech. I mean, hate speech, racism, requires a power gradient. It flows from people with power to those who are powerless. We are quite literally a colonized, exiled people who live under a brutal military occupation with one of the worst human rights records in the world. We are powerless. And it is shocking, quite frankly, that after 75 years of this, we are still being tone policed, and the extraordinary hate and violence that comes our way from Israel is given a pass, and some of those horrendous things said about us for 75 years, and our reaction to that is what Western media latches onto. It's shocking. I've never, I've heard some really horrible things said by Ukrainians about Russian soldiers, really violent statements. I've never once heard anyone in the media take them to task on that. Why the double standard?
A U.S. Israeli citizen killed by a Palestinian while in Israel for a wedding was described by you in a tweet as a privileged white man and human garbage. That sounds like hate speech.
He was a privileged white man, an Ivy League young man from America, who left his home to serve in a colonial military with one of the worst human rights records in the world, that is violently oppressing and robbing Palestinians, robbing my family and my people. And he was killed by those natives that he had been oppressing. I think the media should be honest about who he was and stop pretending that he was an innocent guy just attending the wedding, because that's not true. And you know it's not true.
But
and again, there are literally people, there are literally Israeli settlers armed to the teeth right now, right now as we're speaking, rampaging through Hawara after already having committed a pogrom just days ago. They are back there again. And here we are. Here is the again, Western media tone policing Palestinians about how we talk about those people who have been terrorizing us for 75 years. I think that's the problem.
Do you?
Not how we speak about these people who give us their hate, who I mean, we are on the receiving end of violent hate.
Susan Abulhawa, do you hate that young man?
I don't love him. I don't love him. I didn't ask you if you loved him,
but you described him as human garbage. That sounds like you hate him.
You know, here you are again. I mean, why is there no acknowledgement? Why is there no acknowledgement of what of the hatred that we, the violent hatred that we are constantly on the receiving end? Why does no one ever take a Ukrainian to task for hating the Russian soldiers who are decimating their country? It's as if it's not okay for us to hate. You ask me as if it's some kind of criminal activity for me to hate the people who have literally destroyed my family and destroyed my country. And I'm not going to respond. Please let me just finish. Yeah. You asked me on here to give my point of view, and that's what I'm doing.
Yes.
But you want to put me in this. You want to paint this picture of the hateful Arab, the violent Arab, the irresponsible, the irrational Arab. I mean, this is the respectability politics that I'm not going to engage in. If I could respond to that,
Susan Abulhawa,
sure, sure.
I'm not trying to paint you in any way. What I'm trying to explore.
But you are.
If I could respond, what I'm trying to do is work out the conundrum that is faced by us here in Adelaide. And that is, we have a writers' festival in which it is argued that Susan Abulhawa should be allowed to give a reasoned, nuanced argument for the plight of her people and how they are suffering. And yet, many of these comments that you have tweeted and which you own are not nuanced, and they could be taken as hate speech. If I've understood you correctly, what you're saying is it's okay for a people that you say are oppressed to hate. It's okay for people who are, you say, are oppressed, for them to describe a man who's been killed as human garbage. Is that what you're asking us to accept here in Adelaide?
So here you are. You see, here you are again, even in just the framing of the question, a man who has been killed, not a veteran soldier who came to a foreign country to oppress and dispossess and rob native people.
Was he a soldier at the moment he was killed?
Are you serious?
Was he acting as a soldier when he was killed, or was he? He had a history with the Defence Force, and he went there as a citizen to a wedding. Is that what occurred?
So is that the criteria then? Is that the criteria? And so it doesn't matter if he has a history of being a violent colonizer at the moment.
I don't know if he has a history as a violent colonizer.
The entire Israel military is a violent colonial military.
So do you hate all members of the Israeli Defense Force?
But here you go again. And like, it's the framing of the question. I think you are the ones who have no nuance in even just the framing of the question and even listening to us. I have been sitting here telling you and asking you, why has no one ever taken a Ukrainian to task for the language that the very violent language that they have used against Russians? I mean, even the BBC published an instruction manual of how to incinerate Russian soldiers, how to burn them alive. And that was perfectly fine and acceptable. And yet, I don't think you'd find that here on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
And that is how we're trying to grapple with this question, because we have a situation where these things are being brought to us, and we have to decide in our community here in Adelaide what is acceptable. What is acceptable speech? What is acceptable language?
In the framing of your question, David, You are, in the framing even of your question, you are ignoring the context of an extremely violent Israeli military occupation, which again, at this very moment, as we are speaking, have their are protecting paramilitary settlers who are armed to the teeth, rampaging through Hawara in Nablus, terrorizing people.
In your video posting before you came to Adelaide in the last 24 hours or so, you said nothing Putin has done approaches the horrors wrought by Western wars, whether in Vietnam, Libya, Iraq, or beyond. What's your point?
My point is to point out the hypocrisy. I mean, you all are just aghast that I would criticize Zelensky, and you extrapolated my words to claim falsely that I am cheering for Putin.
No, I haven't said that.
It's just frankly dishonest.
Susan Abulhawa, I have not said that. I have not said that. And indeed, in your posting, you said that only one online publication contacted you for comment, and that's incorrect. This program contacted you and read out part of your statement to make sure that people understood that you have in the past criticized Vladimir Putin. So you're saying I'm trying to create some terrible picture of you. In fact, we made it attempts to make sure that your criticisms of Vladimir Putin have been put to our listeners. So
no, I appreciate you having me on, actually. But I'm saying when I said you, I meant Australian media.
No, not me.
And, so I should have been specific. You're okay. Right. Let me just rephrase that. So Australian media has extrapolated my words and made their own interpretation and false claims that I am a cheerleader for Putin, in my view has committed horrible crimes and should answer for them. But that does not mean that we cannot have a robust and honest discussion about what brought us to this point in Ukraine.
But
I mean, if in every free democratic society, there should be room to have these conversations.
Sure.
Nothing I've said about Zelensky's past is inaccurate.
You say that Ukraine provoked Russia. Is that what you're arguing?
Okay, let me be very clear. Russia and Putin are responsible for the decisions that they made to invade Ukraine.
Right.
That does not absolve that. Let me finish, please. That does not absolve the decisions that Zelensky made, indeed, that were extremely provocative. And everyone knew, and I've said in my statement, this war came as no surprise to anybody who's been paying attention to what's happening in that region for the past decade. And I did reference John Mearsheimer, but there are many other scholars who have been warning that this is coming because the United States is and NATO are engineering this confrontation in Russia.
So you think that...
Zelensky...
I'm sorry. So you think that Ukraine bears some responsibility for Russia invading them?
I think Zelensky bears responsibility for protecting his people. And I don't think Zelensky, had he not thought that he had NATO on his side,
but what could he have possibly done?
Would have taken
What could he have possibly done that would absolve Vladimir Putin
for one thing, not bomb his own people in Donbass. Number one. Number two, continue to seek NATO membership, knowing
why should he seek NATO? I mean, if he gets elected, and they want to join NATO,
you're not letting me finish.
Well, I'm asking why couldn't they apply to be a member of Ukraine? Vladimir Putin. He's on the record as saying at one point he said, I haven't got a problem with NATO expanding. And indeed, Russia might one day be a member of NATO. So what's wrong with Ukraine wanting to be a member?
It's interesting that you didn't question me about Zelensky. I mean, I just told you that he was bombing his own people in Donbass and that you just let that pass and you honed in on the NATO thing. And secondly, there was a negotiated peace, right? There was a negotiated agreement that could have ended all of this. And Zelensky agreed to it, and Putin agreed to it. But Zelensky backed out. It was Zelensky that backed out.
So it's Zelensky's fault.
He did it at the behest of NATO. For backing out of the peace agreement. Yes, that he's the reason that peace agreement failed. It was him. It was absolutely him. There was an agreement in place, and it was ready to go. And as ironically, this information comes to us from Naftali Bennett, the Israeli prime minister, because he was involved in that.
So if somebody's sitting in a bombed out apartment in Ukraine, they've lost their home and they've lost their family, they should blame Volodymyr Zelensky. It's not Putin's fault for sending the bombs.
And a lot of Ukrainians do, actually. But here you go again. I've said similar things about Yasser Arafat, who I felt bore a lot of responsibility for not protecting his people. That doesn't mean that I absolved Israel of the actual violence. And I think honestly, it's stunning to me that in a supposed democracy and open society, that these conversations are not being had.
Yeah.
It's shocking to me that Western media continues to promulgate this, this kind of good versus evil narrative. It's intellectually dishonest and it's dangerous.
Do you think that?
I mean, we're potentially looking at a nuclear conflict. Hmm. I mean, the ramifications are devastating, devastating,
and they're. I don't think anyone would disagree with you on that front. Now you've got a writer's week function to get to, but just to finish on, do you think Russia should keep Ukrainian territory?
That's not for me to say. I'm not Ukrainian and I'm not Russian.
Right.
These things are for the Ukrainian people to decide. But what I can say is that an agreement had been negotiated.
It's a bit hard for them to decide if there's a Russian tank sitting down your street.
Well, there's also people in the Donbass who want Russia to be there. And I think what's not being reported in the press is the diversity, the range of opinions among Ukrainians. And that's in part because Zelensky has assassinated, disappeared, shut down newspapers, and basically silenced opposition within Ukraine.
Okay.
But there is opposition, and there is a wide range of opinions within Ukraine, and I think those should be listened to as well.
All right. Well, Susan Abel-Howard, thank you very much for giving us your time this morning.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Palestinian-American author who's appearing at the Adelaide Writers' Week. The Premier was not happy with her being there, and a number of major sponsors, including law firm Minter Ellison, have withdrawn their support because they were offended by a number of things that Ms. Abel-Howard had to say, both regarding Ukraine and regarding the situation in Israel and Palestine. But there we are. It's 25 minutes